Thursday, July 30th, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today on the program, we're in the book of Proverbs again. We're in chapter 4, looking at verses 20 through 26 with a message titled, A Heart-to-Heart on Sanctification.
You have absolutely, positively, one who is committed to keep you. This is what's said all throughout the scriptures. And that should mean something to us. That he is that committed to keep his sheep all the way to the end. And that kind of love, that kind of commitment to the project that he started to complete it, that kind of showcase of grace in the course of your life should mean something to you.
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
Last time I preached 2 weeks ago, it was sort of the theme of a new year, old year, new year, and watching and being ready. And as I gave that last sermon from the parable of the 10 virgins on watch, you do not know the day nor the hour, I kind of incessantly beat myself up after a sermon about all the things I should have said and didn't say. Sometimes I probably shouldn't say them because of time, but it's important, I think, to help, if I'm going to give a sermon like that, help us to think a little bit more about watching in the new year and what that looks like and how we can be a sanctified people to the Lord. So we're going to consider Proverbs chapter 4. Next Sunday, we'll come back, and it is the Lord's Supper. This is we'll be referencing many of the preparation aspects of this, but the Lord's Supper will be next Sunday morning, and then we'll be back in our sermon series through the book of Acts. And don't miss that one, because the next sermon in Acts is the guy who fell out of the window, and he fell asleep because the sermon was too long. You can't miss that one. Okay. Proverbs chapter 4, beginning at verse 20. Beginning at verse 20 this morning, let's give our attention to the word of the Lord. My son, be attentive to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them, and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you crooked speech, and put devious talk far from you. Let your eyes look directly forward, and your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. And there ends the reading of God's word. It's one of the strangest phenomenons as a pastor that whatever I preach to you in a given week, I seem to go through that struggle and witness myself as a pastor how weak I am to come back Sunday and then preach exactly what I am and what I've struggled with during the course of that week. I suppose that's why they always say that pastors should first preach, the most effective sermons are the sermons that pastors first preach to themselves. And that is very much the case in light of Proverbs chapter 4. I am going to give you a message this morning on keeping your hearts. That is undoubtedly one of the most difficult things that you can do in this life. I don't come here this morning preaching this thinking that this is some easy task or this is something that we can just easily decide to set ourselves to do. The Lord has to give us every amount of help and strength to desire this and then to begin to learn how to implement it. But in our sanctification, as I said, this is God's will for you, your sanctification. In our sanctification, there is this great task that is given of guarding your heart. And I don't know if there's any passage that helps us better with that than Proverbs chapter 4. I'm not coming at you this morning saying, do this or else, which I think oftentimes when you hear passages like this preached, this is how it comes across. And I don't believe that's the intention of the author. Of course, that's not the intention of God to his people to say, do this or else, as if the threat of judgment holds over you if you don't do a great job in keeping your own heart. That's we have to remember the whole framework of what I just discussed about being justified freely by his grace as a gift and then the whole life of struggle and sanctification that follows. But I preach this morning as a way to motivate you to this great responsibility, because you have absolutely, positively, one who is committed to keep you. This is what's said all throughout the scriptures. And that should mean something to us, that he is that committed to keep his sheep all the way to the end. And that kind of love, that kind of commitment to the project that he started to complete it, that kind of showcase of grace in the course of your life should mean something to you, should mean a lot to you. So this morning, we're looking at this great call to consider in guarding the heart, and we're going to look at that great call and understand the problem with the human heart, and then how we should keep the heart and why we should keep the heart. So again, what this calling is, how we should keep the heart, and why we should keep the heart. You'll notice in verse 20 there of Proverbs chapter 4 that you have a very tender address of a father to a son. My son, be attentive to my words, incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight, keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them. You'll notice, and I was thinking, I don't think that I have, in 15 years of ministry, preached from the Proverbs. I went through all my notes, and I have not spent much time in this book. And I think I've been remiss. I have been wrong in not giving attention more to the Proverbs. This is wisdom. It's beautiful wisdom. You know, the book is wisdom personified. That there's lady wisdom, and that there's this choice. There's two paths in life. There's the path of the wise and the path of the fool. And the path that you choose and the path that you walk has consequences. And here we have this is set in this framework of wisdom here personified, but as a father speaking to his children, as a father speaking to his son, who is looking out and he's got all of life in front of him, and a father who is wise and a father who cares, a father who knows all that's coming down that son's path, all the temptations, all the allure of the world, everything that can pull him off. He is giving him wisdom that is safekeeping. A son who has little knowledge of what is about to hit him, little knowledge of what he is about to be tempted with, little knowledge of life and how to survive it, little knowledge of everything that's coming at him. And all of you fathers who care, know, as you look at your sons and your children, you know the struggles, and you know what you've been tempted with, and you know what you've done, and you don't want your children to do it. Of course not. The central piece of wisdom comes in this form of a call that the son would keep his heart with all vigilance, with all diligence. For he says, what comes out of there are the issues of life, out of the heart. It's one of the great Bible texts that is calling us to most certainly a kind of heart work. And the basic point here is so known by experience, we don't have to even really prove this. You know this. We are aware of what he's saying. If we have any sort of understanding and are able, even as Calvin used to say, the two knowledges that we must have is a knowledge of God and a knowledge of ourselves. If you're going to have any kind of proper knowledge of yourself, if you've ever had any knowledge of yourself, you are immensely troubled at times and shocked by what the human heart can do. So the basic principle that is given right here, where he says this right in verse 23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life. What he's saying is that whatever is going on in your hearts, whatever is there, it is directing your lives. Whatever is coming out of there is where you're headed and where you're going. Your heart directs, in a sense, all your faculties. In other words, it's a fountain. Whatever is energizing that fountain is directing you. It directs all your actions. It directs your thoughts. It directs your desires, your wills, all of it. It's the spring of the soul. You know this. When you get up in the mornings, you have plans, you have purposes of things that you're pursuing that you're going to do. And you know that whatever your heart is set on, everything else that follows in what you do will go get it. I was thinking a little bit about the words of David when he was dying. His dying words as a father to his son, Solomon. And if you know Solomon, you know this is a really remarkable conversation. Everything that Solomon fell into, and who's the author of many of the Proverbs, when David was speaking on his deathbed, here's what he said. Solomon, my son, learn to know the God of your ancestors intimately. Worship and serve him with your whole heart and a willing mind. For the Lord sees every heart, and he knows every single plan and every single thought. If you seek him, you'll find him. But if you forsake him, he'll reject you. David was telling his son that true worship of God, to know him intimately, has to do with the heart, and from out of which comes a willing mind. To love the Lord with all of his heart was always the command, the central command of the law, wasn't it? The summarizing command of the law. Now, you know how hard this is. I've been reading devotionally Phil Ryken's little book on King Solomon. And in that book, it's a great little devotional book, but in that book, he talks about the three sins that ruined Solomon. And the three sins that ruined Solomon were power, sex, and money. And I thought to myself, as I was going through that book, that is exactly summarizes, you really could put all that those categories today, every sort of sin and struggle into those three categories of power, sex, and money. Solomon is writing many of these proverbs. Solomon knows this struggle. Solomon lived this struggle. And think of all of the things that we've studied about what the scriptures teach us about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Constantly coming, constantly consuming, constantly overtaking the heart. You go through some of these and you think of some of the struggles of power. What are we trying to live for, and what are we trying to achieve in life? Well, just look at what goes on. We're all trying to achieve success. We all have goals. We all have aspirations. We all want to make our names great. Right there, we're concerned, and all this leads from there to consume our hearts with worry and fret over all kinds of things. Think of the allure of sex and all of the challenges that come with that out of the human heart. Where does one little lust lead to try to fulfill it with all that you have to go get it and fulfill it, and then it somewhat satisfies you until you're on to the next lust to conquer it and complete it? Money. What is the heart set on? A love of it. It becomes attractive more than anything else. And you know what this does to the heart. We've got to get this thing. We've got to have this. We've got to do this. Nothing, everything else is pushed out of the way until we have conquered what the desire of the heart is with some material gain. So many of you are sitting here right now. And if you could fit it in these categories of money, sex, power, it's consuming us in some way so that it's hard to even focus right now. You know your hearts. If you have any sort of sensitivity to them, you can't even set your eyes right at times. Here's the absolutely bad news in the struggle. The Bible's assessment of the human heart is as bad as it gets. In other words, Jeremiah, you know, has that great statement that the heart is deceitful above everything else and desperately wicked. Who can know it? You know, in our society, not only is society telling you to follow your heart, love your heart, listen to your heart, but we play games with our hearts. We justify what's going on there. And we say, oh, it's not that bad. God doesn't mind. I'm always amazed at what we can do to justify what we're doing and think that God even accepts it. After the flood, remember what God said before the flood. God said, I'm gonna destroy mankind, which I've made off the earth, because what's going on in that heart is evil incessantly. It doesn't get any better, does it? Did the flood solve the problem? Obviously not. For right after the flood, God said the same thing. Every inclination of the human heart, and I'm quoting, is evil from childhood. Think about presenting our children for baptism this morning. I would love to believe that every little human heart that is here is good, but that's not God's testimony. This is a major problem, isn't it? This is a major problem. This is why we need a washing of the heart, which this signifies and seals. For out of the heart, said Jesus, comes what? See, we would love to say that it's just what comes into the heart that makes us bad, but that's not the testimony of Scripture. Jesus said, it's out of the heart that proceeds murders, evil thoughts, adulteries, every lust of somebody else that's not your spouse is adultery that came from the inside, not just from the out. Every theft, every false witness, every gossip, every slander, everything comes from inside. Is the testimony. Human heart, who can know it? Here's a father and his son. Imagine the father embracing his son or daughter, putting arms around him and holding him, knowing that this child knows nothing about his heart, knowing that he knows nothing about everything that he's going to be faced with, every sort of temptation under the sun. Son, listen to my wisdom. Now, as I was thinking of this sermon, you of course have to make a huge distinction. The world has no concept of this. You know that. But what has God done for you? Well, the very thing he did in giving his son, when Jesus came, his first public discourse was a discourse on what he had to do to rescue the human heart. Nicodemus, you need to be born again. I don't get that. You mean, how do I go get in a womb that's big enough for me to fit back in there? Uh-uh. You need life pumped into that dead heart. The Holy Spirit has to give you a new heart. He has to cleanse that heart. He has to wash that heart. He has to regenerate that heart before anything, any life is ever going to flow out. You're completely dependent upon the Lord to do that to your hearts. And he does. And as he's given us a new birth, a new life, now we're initiated, you see, into this struggle that I've described. And this is a struggle that we still have not really grasped well or appreciated that really is going on still in the human heart. It was Charles Bridges who once said, "The great difficulty in conversion is to win the heart to God. And after conversion, it is to keep it with him." That is just absolutely true. Both are a work of complete grace. You know that. Here's the context in which wisdom comes to us in Proverbs 4. This is a loving father who loves his son. And he's saying to him, put it in our categories. This is what the Proverbs are meant to do with wisdom. God has broken sin's dominion over you. God has given you new hearts. The condemning power of the law is shattered, but he's not removed or taken the presence of sin yet away. It still greatly affects your hearts. It still greatly plagues your hearts. You still struggle with this. The same things that you did before conversion, you're still prone to do after. I mean, this is exactly what Paul was saying in Romans 7. I was once alive apart from the law, but when the commandment came, sin revived and I died. The very commandment that promised life proved to be death to me. For sin, seizing an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me and through it killed me. And then he goes on to tell you exactly what all that means. The things that I don't want to do, I find myself doing. What in the world is this? How could it be? I mean, I can't be a Christian and still do that. Any of you know the struggle? Any of you live the struggle? The good that I find I desire within me, this is often what I don't do. It's the war in the heart that's going on. Paul would even say that I discipline myself. I discipline my body and keep it under control. After preaching to others, I find myself disqualified. Why is this so serious to take the heart struggle that's going on? Why is it so important to take that heart struggle seriously? Well, how many examples do you need in the Bible? Achan sets his heart on a garment and steals it. David is your first pornography example in the Bible. Did you know that? He walks out in carelessness, leaving a very relaxed life. Everyone else is off to war. Walks out on the roof, and there she is, naked. And he's staring. And where did that lead? To a ruin of his life. The Lord saved him. But think of the severity of what happened. It led him to murder. It led him to adultery, all from that look. And then he faced the consequence of a lost son. How many examples do you need? How many children of God, and I say this, children of God have ruined their earthly lives? I'm not talking about heavenly life. You're justified, you're saved as a believer. How many have suffered real consequences and ruined their earthly lives by not listening to this, not listening to wisdom? Son, daughter, listen. They followed whatever lust comes out of their hearts. They're involved in all kinds of things, and they know better. And it's not escaping. There are serious consequences coming. Listen to the command. Guard your hearts with all diligence, with all vigilance, for out it springs the issues of life. It springs where you're going. It springs where you're headed. You've spent enough, the New Testament says, you spend enough of your past lifetime doing that stuff, it motivating you in a different way. Now the question then is, how do you keep the heart, right? That's the question. How do we do it? Hopefully I've made the case for the fact that it's important to keep the heart, but how do we do it? That's the great concern here. And this is where the Father's wisdom speaks to his son. He grabs his son, and you can picture this. He's heading out into the world, ignorant of the struggles, ignorant of the battles. And his son, his father says to his son, what? What do you tell your son's fathers? I remember when a man was dying on his deathbed who had died of lung cancer. He'd smoked his whole life. And as his son was sitting on his deathbed with him, the father's advice was, son, don't smoke. Break your heart.
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We hope you'll join us again next time for part two of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.